turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 2. We'll look at chapter 2, and then we'll see what time it is. Chapter 2 may be all we get through tonight. I know with the men's and ladies' classes, some of you are already about worn out from sitting for an hour already. Thanks for that short afternoon. Some of you probably didn't get your math. If you remember, we had talked about the book of Hebrews, about the fact that it doesn't really matter what man wrote it down, the author is God. And God has a lot to say in the book of Hebrews. We talked last week about chapter 1 as well, and the fact that Jesus, the Son of God, was superior to the angels. We talked about the fact that the way this book is written, almost as though it's a sermon outline or a teaching tool. And there is that first premise that God used to speak through the prophet, but now he's spoken to us through his Son. And then the rest of the book is going to deal with that Son. Last week in chapter 1 we saw that he was superior to the angels. This week we're going to see what that means then. Since he is superior to the angels, that means something. So we start chapter 2. The first four verses deal with what that means. Notice again the use of the word therefore at the beginning of chapter 2. He says therefore. So he said, okay, Christ is greater than the angels. And we've quoted a bunch of Old Testament scriptures, several from the Psalms, as well as some from Deuteronomy and Samuel and the Chronicles. And he's quoted verses showing that Jesus is greater than the angels. And so then he says, therefore, since all that's the case, since that's true, since Jesus is greater than the angels, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard. Since Jesus has spoken to us in these last days, that was his premise, remember. And since Jesus is greater than the angels, then we need to pay closer attention to what he had to say. That's one of the things we did this morning. We pay closer attention to what Jesus had to say. That's what we always need to do. If Jesus says something, we need to listen. Remember on the Mount of Transfiguration, also at Jesus' baptism, both, the voice from heaven coming down, this is my beloved Son, hear ye him. In other words, wake up and listen. This is important. So he said, we need to pay more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. He's not even talking about just turning and forgetting about all of them. Don't even let them slip. You ever held a rope or something in your hands and you maybe pulling on something and it slips a little? You didn't let go, but it just slipped. You get that rope burn when it slips. But it slips. And if you keep letting it slip, before long, you're going to slip right off the air. So you have to tighten that grip and hang on tighter. Don't let it slip, he says. Hang on to it. Then he says in verse 2, for, why are we giving the more honor to teach these things we've heard? He says, for, if the word spoken by angels was steadfast. In other words, even when angels spoke, it couldn't be changed, it couldn't be moved, it was steadfast. And every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward. Other translations say a just punishment. We think of reward as being a good thing nowadays, but when he talks about a just reward for disobedience, he's talking about punishment. That's what he's talking about. But he says that, he says, you know, even when the angels told somebody something, they better have believed it. They better do what they said, because if they disobeyed, there was going to be a punishment. When the angels told Lot's wife, don't look back. You think they were serious? You bet they were. She looked back, and she got the just recompense of reward for her action. So even the angels, when the angels spoke, it was a serious thing. When the angels came and told Samson's parents, you're going to have a son. He's supposed to be a Nazarite. Don't ever, told the mother, don't drink any grape juice, don't drink any wine, don't eat any grapes, don't eat any, and when he's born, you're not going to cut his hair, and all this. They expected to be followed. when Samson broke that vow and allowed his hair to be cut, he lost that blessing that he had from God, his super strength. He lost that because he disobeyed. There are always consequences, even when angels spoke. But he says that. So if the word spoken by angels reached the people that disobeyed it and transgressed that, they received their punishment that they deserved. Then he says in verse 3, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation? He's already said it. Jesus is better. The salvation we have, it wasn't a physical salvation like the Jews had in Canaan. This is a spiritual. It's greater. It's better. It's a great salvation. And how is it we're going to be able to escape if we neglect that? And then he goes on. He says, which, that salvation that he's talking about, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord. That's the source. When people reject you, when you go and try to teach them the gospel, try to teach them what to do to be saved, a lot of times we get our feelings hurt. There's no reason for us to get our feelings hurt. They haven't rejected us. They've rejected the Lord. But he says, it first began to be spoken by the Lord, and then was confirmed unto us by them that heard him. That's what we have in the New Testament, is those that heard him writing down the things that they heard him say, and teaching those things that they heard him say. Then he says in verse 4, God also bearing witness, both with signs and wonders, and with divers miracles and gifts of the Holy Ghost according to his own will. So God also testified that the things that were being taught were right, because he allowed these people to perform the miracles that they did, and they had the miraculous gifts of the Holy Spirit as well. So that was a confirmation. That was a testimony from God to the people living at that time that what was being said was the real thing, that it was the truth. But notice that it started with being spoken by the Lord. So if the things that angels said were important, and how much more important is it that we listen to what the Son said? And then he explains some more about Jesus' superiority over the angels. Verse 5, he says, for unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. But one in a certain place testified, saying, what is man that thou art mindful of him, or the Son of man that thou visitest him? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels, thou crownest him with glory and honor, and didst set him over the works of thy hand. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. Now, some people think this verse is just talking about human beings being to rule God's world that he created. And there is that aspect of it. He does say, what is man that thou art mindful of? But then he says, for the Son of man. He's talking about a specific person now. He's talking about Jesus. But what about the Son of Man? That's what Jesus called himself, the Son of Man. This is a quotation from Psalm chapter 8, verses 4 through 6. It says, notice what he says at the very beginning of what in our Bibles is verse 8. I don't know why they broke the middle of the sentence to make a verse change there, but it really is part of the quote, belongs to verse 7. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. God has not put all things in subjection under our feet. There's only one person that applies it. And notice then, the Hebrew writer explains that further there in verse 8. He says, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him. But we see Jesus. He's talking about Jesus. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angel for the suffering of death. In other words, he was made a man, lower than the angel, to suffer that death. Crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should take death for every man. For it became him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. Christ is the captain of our salvation. And he was made perfect through his suffering. And notice what he says about that. He says that he's going to bring many sons unto glory. That's right. He's going to bring all of those then that are going to be saved. We're all going to get to go to glory. But the only way for that to happen is for the captain to guide the ship. Christ is our captain. He had to guide the ship for us to be able to get there. And so here we have then this description of Jesus who was greater than the angels. Superior, we saw that chapter 1. Superior to the angels in every way. The Son of God. Now in chapter 2, he's made to be lower than the angels in order to suffer death. See, the angels can't die. Angels are eternal beings like God. He created them, they have a beginning, but they have no end. They will continue to live on forever. He created the angels, but he created them to live on into eternity. But Christ had no beginning, will have no end. But he had to become less than the angels. He had to become human to face that death. And it was through the suffering, that suffering of death, that God crowned him with glory and honor. And that's how then God crowned him with that glory and honor, and now has put all things under his feet. Now, at present, people are still fighting against him. The devil's still struggling against him. The devil still thinks he's going to win. I don't know how he thinks he's going to do it. But he still thinks he's going to win. And there are a lot of people that believe him because they're fighting right alongside him. But at the judgment, everything's going to be all over then. And God is going to call for those who have tried to rebel against his son's sovereign rule. He's going to call for them. He's going to punish them for that. And at that point then, Jesus is going to deliver the kingdom back to God. He's going to lay down all of this glory, all this honor, all this authority that God has placed in his hands. Here again, this section of scripture, talking about Jesus having this glory and honor, being crowned, having everything in subjection under him, lets us know that those premillennialists who are still waiting for Jesus' kingdom to come are misposed. Jesus is reigning. He does have authority. He is over all. Even now, not waiting for a later time. So then, we see in verse 11, for both he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all of one, for which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church will I pray unto thee. This again, another quote from Psalm 22:22. Quoted here in Hebrews to refer to something that Jesus says about us. Jesus isn't ashamed to call us his brethren, his brothers and sisters. What an honor that is. The creator of the universe, the one for whom, as the Hebrew writer says earlier, the one for whom all things are, and by whom all things are, would call us brothers and sisters. What an honor. The Hebrew writer is trying to point out to these Hebrew people who, as they're looking at the coming destruction of Jerusalem, not many years after this book was written, most likely within, at least within 10 years of the time this book was written, possibly just within 3 or 4 years of the time this book was written. And they're beginning to wonder, maybe we did the wrong thing by leaving Judaism to come into Christianity. And the Hebrew writer's letting them know, no, you haven't done the wrong thing. The one who created the world and the one for whom the world was created called you his brothers and sisters. You haven't made the mistake. It's the ones who are still in Judaism who are going to be destroyed. Their temple is going to be destroyed. Their city. Those are the people that have made the mistake. And Jesus, of course, had foretold that coming destruction. So it shouldn't have surprised them. But there were some of the Hebrews who they were wishy-washy. They weren't sure that they had made the right decision. They were thinking maybe we ought to go back to the Jewish law Maybe we're to go back into the Ten Commandments and the Moses Law and the Old Testament rules and regulations. Maybe that's where we should have been. Maybe God's mad at us and he's punishing us and punishing all the other Jews because we're leaving the Jewish religion. They were confused. They were doubting. But the Hebrew writer is making it clear that that's not the case at all. And then he says, and again he says, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. The first part, I will put my trust in him, is from Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 7. 17 rather, verse 8, chapter 8 and verse 17. And then the next part, here am I and the children that God hath given me. That is from Isaiah 8 and verse 18. So he's quoting these things, referring them to Jesus, saying these things about us as Christians. That God has put his trust in him, and that Jesus put his trust in us. That Jesus considers us to be the children that God has given him. He talked about his own apostles that way. He talked in his prayer to the Father, and he said, Lord, I've lost none of those whom you've given me, except the son of perdition, the one that was intended to go astray from the beginning, the one that had to play his role, so to speak. And then in verse 14, it says, for as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, and through death he might destroy him that hath the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. This verse, or these two verses, this section, so powerful in what Christ did for us. He took the part of, made himself flesh and blood, so that through his death, and it seems backwards, it seems hard for us to understand that through his death, he could destroy death and destroy the one who has the power of death, which is the devil. The devil's the one that causes death. People need to realize this. We hear all the time people say, well, God took him home, or God caused him to die, or this, that, no. The devil is the one that has the power of death. The devil is the one who brings our lives to an end, and he uses sin, in many cases, to do that. He uses sin with Adam and Eve to cause them to sin, and because of their sin, death entered the world. He says here that he is going to deliver us from the fear of death. You've been delivered from the fear of death? You should have been. That's why Jesus came and died. Death is no longer anything for the Christian to fear. Oh, sure, that doesn't mean it's a pleasant thing to look forward to, but there's nothing to fear there any longer. Because we know what awaits on the other side. Oh, we haven't seen it. Oh, not that, but we know that something better is waiting for us if we're faithful to him. And then he says in verse 16, for verily he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. Wherefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his best brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted. You ever think about that? Because of the fact that Jesus has faced temptation, he knows, he understands what we're going through. And because of that, he is able to help us. He's able to succor us. It's not succor you like to succor somebody into something. That succor is to provide aid and help. But that's what he's able to do for us because he came down. He can empathize with us. He knows how it feels to have those physical desires trying to get you to do something that you know is not right. He knows that. He's able to then understand us. He can be merciful and faithful. He can be the high priest for us. You see, a high priest had to be part of the group of people he was the high priest for. As long as Christ was in heaven before he came to earth, he couldn't be our high priest. He had to become one of us. He had to become a human being in order to be a high priest for us. That's why he didn't become an angel and come down. He didn't just come down in the form of God or some other form. He had to come as a human being to do these things, provide these things for us, to make reconciliation for the sin of the people. And that's the high priest's job. And now we're going to move then, as we go, when we go into chapter 3 next time that we're together, when we're going to chapter 3, then we're going to start seeing him talking about this, that Jesus became a man. Well, does that mean he's not any better than the angels now? Is he less than the angels? But no, we're going to then compare Jesus' ministry and Jesus' priesthood with the law of Moses and Moses' ministry and the Mosaic priesthood. He's going to show then how much greater Christ is than they were. If you're here this evening, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Perhaps you haven't accepted Christ as the captain. Maybe you're still trying to drive the ship. Won't work. You'll never get where you're going because you don't know where it is. Jesus is the only one that's been there and back. He's the only one that knows the way. He's the only one that can pilot the ship. He's the only one that can be the captain. We've got to submit ourselves to him and follow his way. If you're here tonight, you have an easy response to the invitation for any reason. We ask you to do so as we can.